I've long extolled the virtues of traveling. It's an opportunity to see new places, learn about different cultures, try exciting foods, and I legitimately cannot remember a trip that I regretted taking. Okay, possibly a family trip to Phoenix when I was a child, where I got food poisoning on the first day and was confined to a bed the whole time. But you know what? I went to Phoenix earlier this month and had a delightful stay. As Captain Holt from Brooklyn Nine-Nine would say, vindication! I'm in the midst of a whole bunch of travel. Including Phoenix, it'll be 5 different stops in the span of about 6 weeks. But a few of those are weekend trips, where I'm only gone for a few days, and then back at my home base. My guest today is a little more committed than that. Mariana Barbachano decided to give the digital nomad life a try a few years ago, and soon realized she could make a living as a travel blogger while exploring all the world has to offer. And after jet-setting around Europe, she's decided to settle in a European country for the next year. We're chatting all about that new phase of her life, how she's managed to travel on a comfortable budget without wildly altering her lifestyle, like staying in a hostel with 47 separate people in your room, and the top karaoke songs to perform. As a reminder, the final episode of Good People, Cool Things will be on May 8th. The show will live on across the podsphere, so if you've just gotten here, you got plenty to dive into. And I've still got some fun things going on for you to check out. We'll be updating all across the website and on the show, but enough about that. We got an episode to get to. I'm Joey Held. This is Good People, Cool Things. And here's my conversation with Mariana Barbachano. Can you give us your name and your elevator pitch and also the type of elevator that we're riding on?
My name is Mariana. I am a travel blogger. 2 years ago, I started a website to document a bunch of my travels in Europe. Since then, I've just been a digital nomad and kicking it, traveling around Europe. Before that, I guess part of my elevator pitch, I was a total corporate nerd. So for 10, almost 12 years, I put in the good effort and did all the right things and loved it. That was a great chapter of my life. But now, new chapter. I'm an absolute lover of travel. I have a giant bucket list I'm trying to get through before I basically can't. and yeah, that's my little elevator pitch. And the elevator I'm on, are there multiple elevators? Can it be like glass where you can see everything and it goes super fast? I guess that's my elevator.
Yes, I love it. The last time I was in a glass elevator, it was at the corner of the hotel. The side of the hotel, and the view was just glass on one side, and it was just another building. And I was like, I wonder if the other elevators here have better views, but this one is not. It's not good.
You know what happened? I bet they built that where yes, this is going to be the best view. It's like a total thing. And then the other building got built and they're like, crap. This was a waste of money.
They just put up like curtains.
Posters.
No, I feel like in the past, I don't know, every year for the past 10 or so years, I read something that's like travel blogging is dead. Like travel writing is done. We can't do it anymore.
I think that's true. I'm like, oh God.
But you're making it work, clearly. So was there like a particular moment or something where you're just like, okay, I have to do this? Was it just you travel a bunch and you're like, hey, I can write.
I gotta inform my mom and dad that I'm not dead.
That aha moment. Yeah.
Yeah. So right around COVID, I just had a little bit of an existential moment, as literally the entire world did. I was like, okay, I've been in corporate for 10 years. What do I do now? So I decided to go on a sabbatical. Honestly, I got my COVID shot, and the only country that was accepting people, or a few countries in Europe were accepting people. I have a European passport because of where I was born. So I was like, okay. So if COVID goes to absolute shit, maybe if they kick me out of whatever country I go to, I can just land at my grandma's in Romania. I'm from Romania. Or maybe they'll ship me back to the US. So I'll just go to Europe. But for the first year after I left the corporate world and I was traveling around, so this is 2021, I could not, like, I if I even thought about getting a job, even a remote job, even something silly, I would have like a physical, like type of, I think people who have, I didn't realize the burnout and the type of stress that I was overcoming. I guess I didn't even know that I was getting sick because I just didn't want to go back to work. I just didn't want to have meetings. I didn't want to think about that. I was still living on my savings. There was a big level of burnout that I think takes time to get over. I definitely say I was a little lucky. I planned ahead of time a bit and I had a bit of savings. So if you have that option, it's nice to actually take the time to, I don't know, get over whatever the heck you didn't even realize you were trying to get over. Anyway, a year in, I was like, all right, I'm kind of running out of money. I should do something. Do I want to go back to corporate? Do I still have that book at the moment? And by the way, I loved my job at corporate. I had an amazing team. I worked there for 10 years. It had nothing to do with that. I think it just has something to do with a decade somewhere. Just, I don't know, kind of takes it out of you and you have no idea that it does, you know? But I was running out of money and I am responsible in that way that I was like, okay, what am I going to do? So I Googled. I was like, what the heck can you do while you're still remote traveling? Because I had really, really enjoyed creating my new lifestyle. Like I would wake up in the morning, I would have a cup of coffee, I would read, I would go out on one adventure, like a hike or something. I like really loved my new lady of leisure lifestyle. So like, man, how can I not give that up? I Googled and there was like a ton of things that you could do. So obviously you could get a remote job at a corporate company. So I was like, okay, let's put that as a last resort. But then there's like a yoga instructor. I'm like, not stretchy enough. I cannot do this. And then like you could teach English. I was like, maybe. I think in my former life, I could have totally been a teacher and I think I still can. It's like it's my spirit calling to be a teacher or something. So I was like, okay, that's like second to last. And then came travel blogging. Have you watched Parts Unknown with Anthony Bourdain? It's on BBC.
Yeah, I've seen some episodes. Yeah.
Okay, me too. I always thought he was like the most badass dude because he was so real. He cursed. He went into places and ate things that most people didn't. And I was like, maybe I could be like Anthony. I didn't even think travel bloggers. I just thought maybe I could speak and write just like him because that would be cool. And if I could make money on the side, that would be great too. I just went for it. I bought a coach that teaches you SEO like proper. Give me a good shot at trying to make money off of travel blogging. And I was like, all right, I got a coach. I'm giving myself 6 months. If something doesn't if I don't have any indication that this is going to go well or this is going to help sustain me as like a little passive income stream, then I ditch it. I could do 6 months. And then after 6 months, I was like, oh, I really like this. It's not that bad. I'm learning something new. I'm traveling and writing about it. A bunch of my stuff are going to the top of Google's rankings and people are reading them and emailing me about my trips for information. So I was like, ooh, potential. So then I was like, okay, 6 more months. Let's see if it works. So I just I work like that. Like I'm like, is travel blogging dead? No, it's not. There's definitely room in the market for a bunch of stuff. But I'm 2 years in to travel blogging. And I'll tell you the first year I was like 6 months, let's just see if it worked. I just went 6 months at a time. And just finally after the first year, it started making money that I could live off of. So I was like, okay, pursuing this for the moment. I was shocked because I told my parents this is how I make money. And they're like, what? Is this real on the internet?
Amazing. And I always like to ask a question you wish you were asked more frequently. And I feel like this is a nice time for this because people think of travel. They think typically, at least the people I talk to, yeah, you need a lot of money to do it. You need to bring all this stuff with you. I just saw some, I think it was a travel and post or something where they're just they were interviewing people like how many pairs of underwear you bring on a trip, on like a 7-day trip. And people were saying 14 pairs, 21 pairs. And I was
thinking,
you
pooping your pants the entire time? It's weird.
What is happening? Like, why do we need that much? Also, that's the easiest thing you can wash in a sink if need be. Like, you don't need to go all wash. So all of that is to say, how do you afford to do this?
That's definitely, sometimes I don't get asked this question because I think, money talk is like not talked about, and you don't want to, I'm like, do I want to get into my finances? But I'm so shocked that you don't actually need as much money as you think to travel for longer periods of time. So for example, just quick hitter numbers. Last year, I traveled full-time in Europe, and I went, let me just give you like the highlights, right? I went to island of Portugal in Madeira and stayed a week and hiked like the mountains. I went to Mallorca Island off of the coast of Spain. I went to Sardinia for a month and just hiked and went to the beaches. I was in Italy. I was in London for a month. Spent a month in Provence in the south of France, like wine tasting and just plopping around, trying to not piss off the French people. And so I was like, I also went to Albania, random Eastern European country, and spent like a couple of weeks on the beach. These are like some of the places that I spent 2-3 weeks to a month in. And the entire year that I traveled, I spent about $55,000 for the entire year. I'm not traveling in hostels. But I do try to keep a budget, right? So for loosely in my mind, I'm thinking like $3,000 to $4,000 a month, which is honestly the same type of budget that I used to have when I lived in Austin here. Except I was making a whole lot more money as I was working for corporate America. The funny thing is, like, you, when you travel, you eliminate a bunch of costs that you don't think about, especially when you're thinking about traveling like for a month instead of like a week on a resort, or thinking like you're moving from vacation mindset money to like traveling mindset money. And when that happens, you're like no longer shopping when you're traveling. You're just, because you have to live in a suitcase, right? You're not going to the restaurants all the time, because guess what? You're going to get sick of going to the restaurants and finding restaurants all the time. So you're going to like, you know, pick places with a tiny kitchen and like do a cute little meal there. So that there's actually like a lot of cost savings that can happen. But yeah, I traveled on 55K last year and went to some bomb ass places in Europe. And I swear to you, if I would stay in Austin, my hometown, basically, for that year, I definitely think past years I've spent more in Austin, not seeing all these things and not like experiencing all these adventures. And I don't know, it's wild to me that it really doesn't take that much, as much money as I originally had thought. Of course, you have to budget, but there's tons of hacks. I mean, I write about like what I do and how I pack, you know, definitely not 14 pairs of underwear. You can find a washing machine anywhere. Even in the freaking depths of Albania, I found somebody to like a washing machine place that you could sit there for an hour and wait for your clothes to like wash and dry.
I was thinking the last time I was in Europe, specifically Bratislava, I was in such a cute apartment. Just, it had everything. It had a nice kitchen area, had a very expansive living room, which I was like, okay, this is great after a long day of exploring. Yeah. And it was just, it had laundry, it had a nice bath. And I was just like, I'm upset that I'm only here for a couple of days. I would have liked to stay here longer.
Oh my God, it was such a nice time to go somewhere. And I'm like, I could live here. I have that personality. I know not everybody does, but I'm like, oh.
I'm the same way. I empathize. And perhaps this segues nicely into something else that we talked about a little bit, is you've been to many cities. I mean, you just named your last year, and there's been quite a few more beyond that as well. So when you're getting into a new city, when you're living somewhere for a long time, or even just, you know, if you're spending a couple weeks somewhere, how do you break in to that new city? And is there anything that you shouldn't do, obviously, besides, you know, waving your money around and saying, I'm a tourist?
I know, to wave my money around. People are going to come steal my stock. But I think the first time I started, like, so even in my old corporate life, I traveled a bunch on my own in general, but I always used to travel with somebody or for business or something like that. So when I went on a sabbatical and I started that, like, also in the time of COVID, there was not a lot of traveling or tourism. I was like, oh my God, I don't know. The first country I went to was Croatia. I had never been to Croatia. I was like, this is former Eastern Europe, but it's also nice and pretty. And everybody goes to Split and Dubrovnik. It's where Game of Thrones was filmed. Should be nice. I knew nobody. And their language that they speak is nothing that I am familiar with. They definitely need more vowels in all of their words. Like Dubrovnik, have you ever seen that spelled out? That's not what it sounds like it's supposed to look like. So I went to Croatia and I was like, oh my God. But this is where I learned the biggest lesson. Like, I made some amazing friends and I really connected with the city because I didn't know, like, I didn't know anybody in there. So I have like a few rules when I go into a city, even especially when I know people there. One of the first things is like, you have to resist like claiming a spot. So I love going out like the first week and going to like exploring my little town where I'm at and finding my little coffee shop, finding my little bakery, finding that restaurant that I love. But one big piece of advice is like, just don't go to the same place twice, at least for the first couple of weeks. Like, choose if you love a coffee shop that you've been to, don't go. Just keep going to the next place, next place, next place. Or if you take the same route to get to your grocery store, don't take that same walk each time. Like, take a different way to come back and forth. So like, don't claim your spots within the first week. Like, try to go to someplace different, at least for the first month that you're in the city or the first whatever amount of time. So that's my first rule. Don't claim spots, especially when you're there for the first time. Secondly, if you know people in the city, just say no to meeting up with them for the first week or 5-6 days. The idea here is you're trying to connect with the city on your own. And every time, like, I met up with friends from cities, they have their own experiences and their own like ideas of the city. And I just don't want to, like, I don't want to have their mentality kind of skew what I think about the city. I want to have a fresh like look at Prague, for example, before I meet up with all my friends from Prague who have stayed there. And they're like, oh, I like this. I don't like this. This is my favorite, blah. This is, I don't want to know that. I want to just a blank slate, right? So for the first week or so, I try not to meet up with anybody and I try to do my own thing. That's my second rule. Afterwards, yeah, I can meet up with people because I've already been in a bunch of places and I've already made up my mind and gotten to know and connected with the city on my own. And then the third, which is going to be like tougher, is basically don't lean on Google. I have a ton of obviously Google Maps. Obviously, I have like little restaurant apps, little like how to get to place to one place to another. I definitely lean heavy on researching a bunch of bloggers' content about the city too, so that I can learn. But yeah, I don't use Google. Just ask the locals. So if I'm at a coffee shop or I'm at a like restaurant, I'm like, ooh, what would be a good place to see a show tonight or like some music tonight? Don't Google that. Ask your waiter. Ask the person sitting next to you, hopefully not another digital nomad. But who cares? Even if that's that'll have a fruitful conversation on its own. So those are kind of like my like top three. Don't stick to a place the first week or two. Like, just explore a bunch of new places. Say no to meeting up with your friends and give yourself time to connect with the city on your own. And yeah, don't use your phone. Don't use Google to get around. Just try to find your way and make new friends and ask the locals. Old school, like super old school. But that's how I learned that you could really start to appreciate the city and make your observations on your own, make new friends on your own, learn stuff that's beyond like the internet, which is always going to be curated information anyway. Yeah. So those are like my 3 rules. You?
Yeah. My addendum on the no Googling is sometimes, yes, you might use Google Maps if you're like, I'm trying to get to a destination or something. But even with that, I would say to not be looking down the entire time, because I think like there's so many times where I've put in a destination where it's like, oh, it's a restaurant or a park or something. And then on the way, I'll see something else and I'll go down this path. And the Google is big, like, no, go the other way, the other way. And I say, Google, calm down. We're going to get back to you. We're going off this beaten path, though. And you had mentioned Prague, and a good example of that was I was headed. I don't even remember where I was headed, but I remember the thing that caught my attention. There's a statue whose name I'm going to blank on, but it's right outside the opera house. And it's this like veiled, wearing a robe and a hollow face. There's like no face. So it's just like a hollow shape for the head. And there was a tour guide given a little tour, and he was saying how he's like, I wasn't on this tour, but one of my colleagues was leading a tour, and he said, don't stick your head in here, because that's a thing that people do to try and see what's inside, which is nothing. It's nothing inside, but people see a big black hole and they're like, oh, what is that? And so this one guy on a bachelor party tried to go in there and apparently kind of almost climbed in there. So he was stuck from maybe mid torso down, and the guide was recounting what his colleague was.
Please don't let him be an American.
I'm sure he was an American. I'm sure he was. And he said, you know, his friends being the supportive crew that they were, they called for help. And then he said, oh, no, that's not what they did. They actually just pulled his pants down and started smacking his butt just in the middle of public, and then kept going along their way. And I think eventually someone helped him out. But what a traumatic experience. And if I had been, you know, phone face down,
you would have never seen this guy's butt.
I didn't see the guy's butt, but I would have never heard the story and could retell it as if I had seen his butt.
Yeah. Also, you know, like, a bunch of times, so whenever you're doing, like, you're Googling, you're like, okay, this is the restaurant I want to go. I'm going to make it there, blah, blah, blah. So you're going on this, but then some of the best restaurants that I've gone to, you just, in Europe especially, it's, but not just in Europe, all over the world, there's just people spilling outside waiting to get in line. And that's where the locals are. And those are not going to be in any bloggers, whatever, not on any Instagram thing. So sometimes you just have to kind of ditch the safety of what Google is telling you has the best stars, best ratings, blah, 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 whatever, and just kind of give it a freaking shot. Like, wait, there's this little hole in the wall. There's a line. It looks great. Why don't I just like stop in and get a little, like, leave? It kind of like reminds you to leave room for the adventure of just discovery. It could be shit, but you know what? At least you have a story if it's shit. Or it could be absolutely phenomenal. And then you're like, wow. Good for me for being brave and going to a place that I didn't even like look up. No, I discovered this. So I just like that spirit, you know?
Yes. So 100% cosine. And you had talked about how in your corporate job you had burnout. And now that you're traveling a lot, I think this is true of any activity you do a bunch. Is you can still get burnout while traveling, which is weird to say. Weird to think about, but it's true. If you're doing it enough, you can feel
burned out. It's such a privileged thing to say, like, burnt out. I'm like, who am I?
So when you feel this coming on, how do you identify first that it's happening? And is there a way to kind of structure your day or your week or month or however long you're there to try and avoid those telltale signs of burnout?
I felt like an absolute like ass when I thought, I was like, am I burning out traveling? What the heck? So when I was traveling a little bit fast, like going months without, so I would like month to month, I would be planning every trip. I would be going hiking or doing all the tours, doing all the things that I was telling you to discover a city. Basically, when you look at a really beautiful place, or when you're in a place where people are like, wow, and you're just thinking to yourself, like, I've seen better. When you have that kind of attitude, you have to kind of check yourself. I think that's when you're burnt out and seeing very new things. Like, there's such a balance, I think, between the novelty of seeing something new and exciting, or going on this hike or exploring this beach or whatever that is. And I think you have to find a balance with, like, novelty versus, like, routine. And when you're seeing too many new things month after month, you kind of get burnt out on just the novelty part of you living your life like that. So that's when you got to, like, that's when I usually, like, take a month off and I'm like, okay, I'm going to sit in my own little city and do my routine, right? Like, just go find a gym, go to the gym every day, have a kitchen so that I could cook at home, get, like, into the normal day-to-day life. Because that's, I think, whenever you're too much on seeing new things, you're craving that routine. That's like your body's basically saying, I'm done. I'm tapped out on seeing new things, exploring new things. I can't even get excited about things that are exciting. So I need a break, right? And you just have to kind of listen to your body and your mind. And that break is usually the other way, right? So seek routine. And pretty soon, we already know, you kind of get bored of the routine and you're like, oh, where to next? I need the fresh little ideas. So that's when you're like, okay, great. Well, let me go back to seeing, and then I can appreciate it with fresh eyes, right? So that's one of the telltale signs that I'm in. Actually, that's the biggest one, that I'm getting a little tapped out with planning. Another one is if I'm on a trip and I find myself not, like, dragging my ass to get out and doing things. Like, I just kind of want to stay home and watch a movie. Meanwhile, I'm in Paris for whatever. I'm like, what? That's when I know my body's telling me, like, ooh, you might need to slow down, take a beat. And maybe, like, the next 2 weeks, you do go back into that routine stage and, like, do your laundry, cook your meals, go out for whatever it is, but just tap into that routine. So for me, it's like two worlds, the, like, explore novelty world, and then the routine, get back to Mariana, get back to basics world. And each time I think I just have to, I'm always just seeking that balance.
One of the other routines, dating and relationships, and you've shared about this both on your blog and on social media and all that good stuff, of destination dating. So what is that like for you? And do you have a best or worst story, whichever is more entertaining?
So in the last 4 years that I've been traveling, So because I chose this type of lifestyle, I think destination dating is as much as I can give to a relationship, because at the end of the day, I don't live in that country. I do have to leave, I choose to leave and move on to my next adventure. But, you know, of course, if I get lonely, I'm going to go on the dating at Bumble. I'm going to go on Bumble. I'm going to be swiping. And I'm like, I'm giving myself a time limit, because that thing can become a game real quick. So I'm like, you got 5 minutes to be scrolling and that's it. If you don't connect with anybody, whatever. but so I definitely connect. I'll go on dates and stuff like that. Destination dating is tough because you're getting, like, the honeymoon period of, like, any relationship within, like, a week that you're there, or, like, even a month that you're there. Oh, those are hard because you really connect with somebody. And then it's the breakup of, like, I've definitely tried to keep it going before. I fell in love with a guy in Portugal. I ended up extending my trip for another month to stay in the south of Portugal. I thought this guy was, and he was, like, the bee's knees. If in another life, he's my boo, you know? But I think one of the biggest lessons learned out of destination dating is it has a beginning. It's absolutely beautiful, but it also has an end, and just have to be mature enough to both sit down and be like, okay, what are we doing? Do I want to live? I mean, honestly, if at the end of the day, it's like, do I like you enough to move to this country and give it a proper shot at a relationship beyond just the honeymoon phase of a relationship? Or the other person, the guy in my case, would have to say, do I like you enough to go on your crazy ass adventures with you and be a digital nomad? And that's honestly, like, if you can get past that question, you can get past that move from destination dating to a proper long-term relationship. For me, it's kind of tough to ask somebody after a month to do that, right? It's like a big conversation. I mean, like, there's not people crazy enough. And I'm definitely like, I don't know if I can, I've not met a person that I would stay in a country for. So at that point, you kind of like break it off. My rules are like, don't talk for the next, like, you know, 4 or 5 months, give space, like totally block them out politely. And then if you can come back after like 6, 7 months and like be friends again, great. But I definitely think you need that space and time before that happens. Otherwise, it's just like fun dating across countries. I mean, you could definitely have a bunch of hookups and like destination dates all over Europe, but it's draining. I think I started leaning on that at the beginning whenever I was new to digital nomading. Because I don't know, like, you just need the attention, the validation. You need to feel like you're loved in another country where you're all alone, all sorts of things. But then the more, it's just draining emotionally sometimes with destination dating. So I just stopped. And now I'm more cautious. I guess I'm more choosy with who if I go out with somebody, how, like, I'm just going to be very honest up front and be like, hey, I'm here for this much time. I'm here for a short time, not a long time. Is that terrible?
No, I think it's accurate.
It's such a catch 22 too, because you're like, I fall in love a bunch, and it's just tough. After a while, you're like, oh, the heartbreak might not be worth, which is why this year I'm actually going to, after like, you know, 4 years, I think I'm going to settle down for a year in Lisbon. That's another chapter of the life, right? I guess you can digital nomad the entire time, but I've done it for 3.5, 4 years. And I'm thinking like, ooh, I'm tired of the destination dating. Why not just plant roots, you know, in a city that I love and just see what happens? Again, give a time limit, 1 year. If nothing happens, whatever. Figure it out after that.
I love a good time limit. And that segues nicely into our top three. You're almost off the hook here. But I assume you have done karaoke already in Lisbon. I can't imagine you'd pick a place to live that doesn't have karaoke. So what are your top three karaoke songs?
You know how you get asked, like, what's your, like, favorite genre of music or whatever? Like, I am all over the place. So I think a good karaoke song has to be, like, you can't sing your favorite songs, because some of them are like kind of, for me, I'm like, God, I'm so emo. My favorite songs are so sad. Or like, they're all out crazy EDM music or something like that. So like, number one, you can't pick your favorite song, but you have a crowd to entertain as well. So you got to pick a bomb-ass song that like gets the crowd engaged. So you're like the karaoke star at the end of the night. At least that's just me. So my top three is, I'll go with old school Smash Mouth, the All-Star song. Like, hey now, you're an all-star, get the show on that one. Because I definitely know all the words. And it's such an upbeat song and people know it. Then my second one, if I'm in Europe especially, have you heard of Aqua?
Yes.
Just got re-famous from the Barbie movie. I'm a Barbie girl in a Barbie world. That's Aqua. And I think they're like a Nordic band, like a Swedish band or something like that. They're so like pop house, and they're super fun. So I would definitely do like Dr. Jones from Aqua, which is a cute little song. And also, if they are just happening to play the video in the background as I'm singing, it's hilarious. And then my last song, if I've had a little too much to drink and I'm like, all right, vulnerability to the max, is Lose Yourself by Eminem. I've definitely done that even at corporate events, and I slay Eminem songs, and I feel like very confident, especially after a couple of drinks, to go full on white boy rap on karaoke. So those are my top three.
Amazing. An excellent playlist.
Thank you so much.
One of my sister's friends, usually when I go visit her, we'll go out to karaoke. And one of her friends is very unrhythmic, I'd say, in rhythmic, what doesn't have good rhythm. And usually that shines through in karaoke, but she did The Way I Am by Eminem one time. And
yes,
it was almost a flawless performance. I was blown away. I was like, and that's kind of an oddly metered song. Like, it's not just a 4-4 time. He's kind of, you know, he's emphasizing words halfway through a verse or through a bar. And
so she practiced that in the mirror.
I imagine so. Yeah. But she also will get up sometimes at very really elevate herself. And it's just a delight to watch. So I'm glad I got to witness that.
I mean, I think that if you really nail a karaoke song, first of all, music is a love language on its own. So it really says a lot about you. You're putting yourself out there. But if you can nail it, God, I still remember my best karaoke moments. I'm I've prepped. I know my top three. There's no question what I'm going to do. I mean, maybe I'll include Britney in one of those top three at some point, whatever, read the crowd. But it's your shine moment. Anyway.
Yes. And to wrap up with a topical travel story, this past winter, I did a bunch of different Christmas markets. And in Budapest, I landed at night and I said, I'm kind of tired. I just want to go out, get a bite to eat. I was planning to bring it back to my little apartment and eat, go to bed, wake up the next day, get all my adventure on. And I just did a quick Google Maps just to be what's nearby that sounds good? Not going to look at the ratings, not going to read any reviews, but just what am I in the mood for? And I found this pasta place that seemed, I saw a couple pictures. I'm like, this looks good. This looks good for what I'm in the mood for. Let's do it. And it said it was just 3 minutes away. And so I'm starting to walk to it. And I go in the middle of this plaza where there was an arcade. There was a gentleman's club, and then there was a karaoke bar where it open door, people are just singing right there. And I walk by it and then I think, wait a minute, karaoke sounds great, let's go back. And I go in and there were just these two girls from London there at the time, and they were just doing all the songs. And so I sign up for a song, and I picked Stop by the Spice Girls.
Yes, I'm adding Spice Girls.
It's a good one for sure. And they freaked out, and one of them was like, can I come duet with you? And I was like, of course. And so her friend was periodically filming, and I still have little clips from that because she sent them to me, and it was just delightful.
It's the best time, bonding over music. Do you remember when you were so I'm not going to take too much more, but do you remember when you were in high school and you would make mixtapes for your friends or mix CDs, and you would curate the songs just for the mix? That's pretty.
Even the order. Yeah. Even the order, you're thinking, you're okay, this is a track 4 song versus the one to kick off the tape.
Yes. Cause you're thinking through the feel, the thing. I'm you're your own little DJ. I think, first of all, in karaoke, if you get any sort of English person up there, they are like prime karaoke people. And surprisingly, Malaysians. When I was in Malaysia and Singapore, there's a lot of karaoke bars. So it's fun to go after dinner because you just booze, you just grab some beer and I think those are more private karaoke bars. So it's just a room with your friends, right? Mm-hmm. And I have to say, first of all, I love the Malaysian people. They're so happy. But I swear to God, each one of them, I think, could be on Singing with the Stars or whatever that thing. I think I'm good. I'm a little full of myself when it comes to the karaoke world. And then Malaysian, regular Malaysian people go karaoke. And I'm like, what? Where did this voice come from? And they have a whole dance. I'm like, this is, I mean, I'm not just talking one or two of my Malaysian friends. I'm talking all 15 that I was with, was a whole band. I'm like, this country has talent, literally.
Well, I need to add that to my list now. That sounds Absolutely delightful.
Yeah, I mean, when you're going to Singapore, there's a ton of Malaysian folks. It's like right across the island.
Yeah, we actually are. We are stopping in Malaysia. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I need to add karaoke to the list.
One for fact. Please.
My sister will be on board for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Amazing.
Good luck.
Well, in the meantime, if people want to learn more about you and follow your travels, where can they find you?
So honestly, my website is called Road Trip Euro Guide. Super simple. And that's where you'll find me. I'm also on Instagram. And they'll link to my website, but it's just my name, Mariana Barbachanu. Just my name. That's like a mouthful. Maybe a Road Trip Euro Guide is better.
little easier than... than the Dubrovnik version of your name.
Right. My Eastern European name, damn it.
Oh, yeah. Mariana, this is so much fun. Thanks for taking the time to chat.
Likewise. Thanks, Joey. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. And we got to end with a corny joke. As we always do, why does Norway have barcodes on its ships?
Oh my God. I have no idea.
So it can Scandinavian. Get after it today, people.
That's a dad joke for sure.
Good People Cool Things is produced in Austin, Texas. If you were a fan of this episode, go ahead and hit that follow button. That helps more people hear the show. You can send me a message, joey@goodpeoplecoolthings.com. Thank you to all of the guests who have been on Good People Cool Things. You can check out all the old episodes via goodpeoplecoolthings.com. As always, thank you for listening and have a wonderful day.